Hello and welcome to Self-Work. I'm Dr. Margaret. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking about loneliness today and how you can address yours. But first, a message from our sponsors. This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. First, let's distinguish loneliness from what it's not. It's not solitude, which is choosing to be alone or quiet. It's not withdrawal or isolativeness. And it's not all about relationship. There are plenty of people in relationships or marriages that feel very lonely. Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. Today we're going to talk about loneliness and how one article I read drew some conclusions about it that made a lot of sense to me. One major point, we can't or shouldn't hearken back to older times and think we need to create those now. That's not the answer to loneliness. Cell phones, virtual meetings or classes, working from home, pandemic hangover, none of that is going to go away. We're not suddenly going to help a neighbor raise a barn or birth a baby. So we've got to understand there's no going back and instead look forward for new ideas and solutions. So what is that solution? I'll put in my two bits per normal here on self-work, and it has to do with not believing your thoughts, but realizing that they may be painting a reality for you that's simply not true, and also how you can begin to address and challenge the reasons for your loneliness. Our voicemail today is from a listener in Australia, although her home is the U.S., and she describes going through a hard time feeling alone and how one of my podcasts on The Good Enough Parent was helpful to her. I always love hearing from you. But first, a message from AG1, and I just realized I forgot to take mine this morning, so I'll take a minute to do that. When AG1 first approached me about sponsoring self-work, I of course had to try it. I not only loved it because I could tell an improvement in my overall energy level, I could tell a difference in how my body felt, how even with my busy schedule, I could count on my body doing what it was supposed to do every day. And now there are studies being published showing that what I've been feeling is backed up by science. In one study, 97% of participants felt digestion improved after 90 days of drinking AG1. And in another, the actual composition of the microbes in your gut changed for the better. Add that to the fact that AG1 is in powder form, so it's easier for your body to digest. What good is a supplement if your body can't absorb and use it? So start with AG1 and notice the difference for yourself. It's a great first step to investing in your health, and that's why they've been a proud partner of mine for so long. Try AG1 and get a free bottle of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/selfwork. That's a $48 value for free if you go to drinkag1.com/selfwork. Check it out. One of my clients, very tragically, was sexually assaulted last month. She really struggled to go to her job afterward. Of course, her emotions were still very rough. She was angry, confused, saddened. It was someone she'd known for years, shocked. But what she also told me was this. I felt like everyone knew what had happened. Now, she had no bruises, no lacerations, no physical signs of being assaulted. But her own mind was still reeling from so much of what had happened that it was telling her others were seeing some kind of change in her, although they were not. Maybe she might have seemed preoccupied to others, but certainly what her mind was insinuating was false. She knew that rationally, but for a while, it was a struggle. She's doing okay now. What does this have to do with loneliness? Not much. Except I can say without reservation that anyone who's been sexually assaulted felt very alone in that moment and may still for many moments more. But that's another episode. But let's move on to loneliness itself. There's been much reporting recently in the news about the loneliness epidemic. I'm including a really good article for you in the show notes that pulls from the best of that research through the years and now as to what the answer is to so many people reporting feeling alone, not connected, or not cared about. And to give loneliness the epidemic status it's been given not only by our own Surgeon General here in the U.S., but by the World Health Organization. The whole world is trying to find ways to help alleviate loneliness's sweeping hold on our cultures. A lot of things are pointed to as contributing factors. We lost lots of social connection time during the pandemic and maybe even our skills to connect socially and began operating in what's most dramatically called a cocoon, where you can choose to digitally provide yourself with food, entertainment, a sense of community online, and that's all you do. Divorce rates are high and women aren't getting remarried. Marriage rates themselves are down. So many of us spend hours glued to our smartphones. There are some clients that I have to ask them to turn their phone or their watch on mute so that they can better focus on our session. But I don't really want to go into what others are saying about why this is happening. What I want to talk about is what you say to yourself about the reason you're lonely. And that reason is something you might need or want to question. Remember, your thoughts are not reality. They may tell you what your perspective is, but your perspective, although valuable, isn't always accurate. Just think about how much diversity there is in the reports of people who saw the same car accident. Memories can be off. Sequence of events is often confusing. Whose fault was it can spawn agreement or disagreement. So the story you're telling yourself, about why you're lonely, isn't necessarily true. First, let's distinguish loneliness from what it's not. It's not solitude, which is choosing to be alone or quiet. It's not withdrawal or isolativeness, which can be a big part of classic depression. And it's not all about relationship. There are plenty of people in relationships or marriages that feel very lonely. I've talked about the loneliness of keeping secrets and portraying a life to others that seems on the outside almost perfect. The painful emotions that were created by those secret traumas or events only grow stronger, but behind locked doors in your mind. I call this, as many of you know, perfectly hidden depression, and its version of loneliness stems from the fact that you don't allow anyone into your real world. It's a kind of self-induced aloneness, nonetheless, very painful. Loneliness occurs when you want or even yearn for connection with others and you can't seem to find it or create it. Let me share with you what exactly the article I mentioned before had to say about what was termed a feedback loop that can cause feelings of loneliness. The author is a guy named Matthew Shayer, and he writes, "In worst-case scenarios, loneliness becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, a snare that tightens with each effort to shrug it off. What you sometimes see is the onset of a kind of feedback loop." And he quotes a guy named Hockley, who's a loneliness researcher. "A person desperately wants not to be lonely, but fear and anxiety have convinced them that their loneliness reflects a fundamental undesirability. They are absolutely certain that they're not worth talking to, that no one likes them, that they're not a good person, and that it's all their fault," Hockley says. "The brain is being hijacked." This was so interesting to me. So I love that analogy of a snare that tightens with each effort to shrug it off. Many of us have painful memories of being bullied by a certain group at school, being kidded about our ears being too big, or shunned because of the church we went to or didn't go to. Those messages of non-inclusion can have a pivotal effect in your life, as you may have fairly successfully made it into adulthood, but your gut remembers what that feels like. So some loneliness or feelings of unacceptability have very deep roots. In a more recent study than Hockley's, subjects cited a lack of meaningful connection as the primary culprit. This was true whether human companionship was available or not. Physical proximity wasn't always the issue. Emotional proximity usually was. Consider the young mother who frets that her existence has been reduced to caring for her baby. Or the person who responded, complaining that his or her partner is only interested in the phone. Another participant in the study that, again, this is in that article in the show notes. It's a wonderful article on the history of loneliness. Anyway, a third participant admits to have plenty of family around, but to being undervalued by them. And a fourth participant said, I'm surrounded by people who only are present in my life because I am useful. I have heard that before, and what a terrible feeling to have. In all these instances, however, let's look at them. People wanted connection, to be valued, to have meaningful connections. But as you listen to these stories again, I'm going to tell them again, remember they are telling themselves a story. The first example, the young mother, she's saying to herself, now that I'm a mom, I've lost all my value as a person. Again, is that true? No. But that's the way, that's the story she's feeling, that's the way she feels right now, because she's lonely. The second participant said, my partner's only interested in the phone. Look at the story that they're telling themselves. My partner is addicted to their phone, and that's about me. I must not be enough. So you're telling yourself, I feel so lonely, and it's my fault. I'm not good enough. My partner, who's addicted to their phone, that reason has to do with me. Here's the third one. Remember the person who said, I'm not valued by my family. So let's look at the story they're telling themselves. I'm not valued by my family, which may be true. So I better not venture into any other relationships. That's not a rational thought at all. I understand that your early family relationships can offer a sense of stability, but if they don't, you can begin to see their inability to offer that to you as not about you. Maybe they have some agenda about putting you down or controlling you in some way. So your story needs to become one of how you're going to get out of that family or at least get more detached from them if you're not valued. And the last example where the person says, I'm valued only for my usefulness. Again, maybe she or he or they are a giver and has surrounded themselves with takers. But that doesn't make it true that you lack value other than being useful. If they were sitting in front of me, I'd come up with a suggestion to make a casual friend and do nothing for that friend. Don't be useful. So that's going to show you, wait a minute, maybe I'm part of creating this problem. I don't wait to see in relationship if people give back to me. I give first and keep on giving and giving and giving, and I'm useful. You can learn something different than what you're telling yourself. Now, I realize it's easy for me to sit in the comfort of my house writing these ideas. I've been through many lonely times in my own life, times when I'd screwed up royally and was hiding or trying to hide a good deal of all that mess. I certainly didn't feel valuable. I was lucky to have parents and family who showed me love throughout those years, however, and I know many people do not have that in their lives. But the point I'm trying to make is that the story you tell yourself is important, especially now that we're talking about it, when you feel lonely. So let's take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment. Did you know that perimenopause can begin as early as 35 or 40? If you're a woman, you may have experienced subtle hormonal changes much earlier than we used to believe menopause began, and you don't know what to do or where to get really good information. Perimenopause, or the years prior to the time when your body begins to slow down and eventually stop menstruating, it's a natural process, as is menopause itself. But that doesn't mean they don't have their own unique difficulties. Certainly, perimenopause threw me for some emotional loops, and some of those loops can be heavily intertwined with mental and emotional struggles. The good news is you don't have to suffer through it anymore, because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. So that's 50 orders in the time it takes you to listen to Self-Work. Now, for a limited time, you could get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today. Depression makes it so very difficult to dislodge negative thinking. But depression is also caused or certainly worsened by negative thinking. And believing or creating a story around this idea of feedback loop, as the researcher said, that because you feel lonely, you must not be likable or valuable? Can you hear how the more you say that, the more you come to believe that, the deeper your sense of loneliness gets? Here at Self-Work, I focus on what you can do about stuff that's not healthy or helpful. And it's not as easy in the world today to necessarily connect. And let's face it, sometimes the lonelier you get, the more urgent you can seem to others if you do approach them, which will typically not work in your favor. So let's get down to what you can do about your thinking. You have to make yourself your own project. You have to begin to start caring for yourself like you care for someone you love and care about. Let me say that again. You have to begin to start caring for yourself like you'd care for someone you love and care about. Now, before you tell me this is bull, how, when I'm lonely already and feeling bad, how am I going to have the energy or the motivation to do this? My answer, which I've given many people over the years, and by the way, this answer did not originate with Dr. Phil. Well, how is what you're doing working for you? It's not. So you've got to do something else to address your loneliness and the story you're telling yourself about why you're lonely. So I've got 6 steps here, and these steps are going to involve writing. Writing your thoughts down gives them clarity and lets you see them in ways that your mind ruminating over them or even telling someone else really doesn't do. Okay, here's step number 1. Write down what you're telling yourself. Be real. I want you to see it in black and white. Let's say you're telling yourself, of course you're lonely. You've screwed up every relationship that you've ever had because you're too jealous or angry or needy or whatever you might say to yourself. Or something else you might say as a reason you're lonely. Who'd want to be with you? What are you doing with your life? You're living paycheck to paycheck, and you've been doing that for months now. So write down what you're telling yourself is the reason you are lonely or you are alone. Okay. And there can be several of those reasons. Number 2, here's the second step. Then I want you to use what we talked about in another episode quite a bit ago. It's called distanced self-talk. Basically, talk to yourself in third person and say to yourself what you'd say to someone else you care about, not in a shaming way, in a comforting, compassionate, and yet real way. Let's talk about the person who says you've screwed up every relationship. And let's say your name is John. So you'd write down, John, I don't think it's totally your responsibility that those relationships failed, but you do have a problem with jealousy or anger or neediness, whatever it is, and let's get to work on that. So basically you're saying, I don't think this is all about you, John, but this part of it is about you. How can you work on it? Or for the second scenario, John, there are a lot of people living paycheck to paycheck right now. You do need to set some goals for yourself, but you can become someone you'd want to choose for yourself. You'll feel better setting a goal for yourself. So you're giving yourself the advice you'd give someone else. And then you write that down. If you can't think of something, Google it. Ask maybe the one friend you have, or, I mean, there are all kinds of writings, but, you know, how do you talk compassionately with yourself, but also reasonably and objectively? Okay, third step. Write down the feeling you have after doing this. Does it feel good? Do you feel better? Do you feel more hopeful? Are you glad that you have something in mind that you can at least do? Maybe that is, I'm going to speak to the grocery store clerk when I get my groceries next time, or I'm going to speak to the person in line next with me. You have a goal. You have something you've decided to do to address not feeling connected. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how hopeful do you feel for at least some change? Maybe it's a 2. Maybe it's a 5. But remember, the second step is to come up with something to do about your feeling. And it can be small things, guys. The fourth step, keep on doing this process until you're what I call a hopometer, is at least above a 5. Keep talking to yourself just like you talk to someone who you care for. Then, number 5, take action on what you decided. For example, we'll go back to the first statement about John. You've screwed up every relationship that you've ever had. Do you hear how global that is? Every relationship, begin to expand your life just a little bit. You haven't screwed up every relationship. You want to challenge that thought. Think of something you can do, a very small thing. Maybe you can buy a lottery ticket and give it to a stranger. Maybe you can help someone pick up groceries on the street. I don't really care what it is. But if you're looking for connection, it takes action on your part. People aren't going to come to you. And the more goals you set and the more goals that you make, the more hopeful you're going to be. And then you repeat this process as needed. That's the sixth step. Now, you've probably figured out by now, what I'm saying is that when you feel you have no meaningful connection with others, you may have to create a meaningful connection with the different parts of yourself and maybe even strangers. The grocery store clerk, the person on the street. You also want to make connection with the part of you that's lonely, that's afraid, but also the part that's gotten through hard times, who's street smart or wants to help. Now, the cynical or hurt part of you may say, this is just too woo-woo for me. I'm not writing down anything. Again, my question is, doing nothing working for you? No. Is sticking to your guns and deciding you have no value because you're lonely? No, that's not helping. I'll hope some of you let me know how this step process works for you, because loneliness can be very crippling.
Speak pipe message from DrMargaretRutherford.com.
Here's the listener voicemail for today.
Hi, Dr. Margaret. I just found your podcast today and listened to your episode about the good enough parent. I don't so much have a question. I just wanted to send you a message to let you know how much I appreciated finding that episode, as I am a mom to two young kids, a 5-year-old and a 22-month-old. And I've really been struggling with parenthood because, well, for a number of reasons, I was recently diagnosed with ADHD. And I also live across the world in Australia from all my family because of my husband's work. And struggle with a lot of isolation and also a lot of perfectionism and questioning myself as a parent and just feeling like I'm constantly failing. Yesterday was one of those days. I'm tearing up as I speak this just because, it was one of those days where I just fell into quite a dark hole and started kind of questioning everything about myself. So all of that to say, I just wanted to tell you thank you for sharing your work. After listening to this first episode that I've come across of yours, I am now going to be an avid listener and subscriber. And also, I wanted to add that I love your accent. Being from the Carolinas myself, the southern U.S., your accent just is soothing to me because I'm not around that part of our country anymore, or anyone who has my accent. So there's just something about your southern accent that just like warms my heart. So anyway, thank you for your work. I really look forward to learning more from you. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
I so appreciate this comment. It warms my heart when someone says, I read your article or I listened to your podcast episode at just the time I needed to. I've podcasted now for 9 years with the help of a great team, and y'all show up every week and you share with your friends, and I could not be more grateful to you. As we enter 2025, I'm looking forward to getting to know you even better. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen or on my website at DrMargaretRutherford.com. I want to suggest you could get a last-minute stocking stuffer. I wrote a little book called Marriage is Not for Chickens, and it makes a great stocking stuffer. It's a funny little book. It's a kind little book about the good things about marriage and partnership. Marriage is Not for Chickens. Again, thank you so much for being here, now and always. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community, all of your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.